Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. This is episode number 5, and I am your host, Ray Harkins. I just wanted to take the time to thank you for everybody that's been checking out the show. I've been receiving some cool feedback from people on Twitter and over email suggesting guests. You can follow us on Twitter at 100 Words Podcast. And the email address is 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. And I respond to pretty much everything on both of those avenues. So feel free to hit me up. And I wanted to take the time to discuss with all of you folk why I'm doing this. Because I realize that some of you might listen to this and be like, is this really needed? Or maybe you just want to know why I decide to take time out of my day and talk to people about stuff that might be irrelevant to most of the world. Most musicians and people that do interviews on a semi-regular basis basically get hit up with the same questions over and over and over. Like, hey, how's your new record? And what makes this different from the last? And how was the last tour? And it's just really topical stuff that doesn't really give the artist or the person that's being interviewed a chance to kind of showcase, you know, who they are and obviously why they create the art that they do. You know, there are obviously some spaces in interviews that are able to expand, but I just feel that this medium of podcasting is absolutely perfect for that. And it gives people the ability to kind of, you know, relax and let loose in a way, because sometimes when you're just like randomly thrown in an interview 10 minutes before or after you play, it's not very conducive for that sort of really genuine conversation. So that's why this exists. And basically, I just want to rip off one of my favorite podcasts that exists out there, the WTF show with Marc Maron. He just does a really good job of being able to sit down with his fellow peers and, you know, sort through why they do what they do, you know, why they create their art, what makes them who they are, what makes them tick. And I just feel that musicians and people of independent culture, and specifically like the DIY nature, because I think there's something so inherently compelling about a person doing something completely on their own and just trying to build something from the ground up, however modest their goals may be. I think it's just, there's just something that obviously keeps myself, and I know a lot of other people, involved with independent culture. So there, that's basically why I want to do this show and why I want to bring this sort of content to you people. So yeah, like I said, if you have any suggestions or feedback, I'll probably be taking those suggestions up until about episode 10, and then we'll probably be kind of locked into the format. But before we got into the interview portion of the show, I wanted to bring back my good friend Scott Arnold. Well, what do you have for us today, Scott, that you would like to recommend to the world that they can appreciate and love?
First of all, I'd like to dedicate this to Eugene Kim, my first record.
Okay.
I'm going to give you some descriptions. You tell me if you like it.
Ooh, I like where you're going already.
Auto-tune.
Okay.
Groovy rhythms.
Ooh.
Shoegaze and Nico Case.
Wow, that sounds really interesting. And I'm not.
Yes.
I'm not being sarcastic.
It is very interesting.
Okay, yeah. Well, then I am interested in hearing further who this person may be.
Well, I suggest you buy a little record called Lisa.
Spell that for me.
I don't even know how to spell it. Yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, Lisa. They actually
it's like a Minnesota band.
Yeah, they performed on, I want to say they did Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah, it wasn't very good.
Oh, it was terrible?
The record's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, really good. It reminds me of kind of that band Glaster, or
sure.
Glazier.
Sure.
Really cool.
Yeah,
so that's that.
You mentioned that to me, I think, last week at some point. I did listen to the record, and it is on streaming services. If you subscribe to Spotify and or Ardio, you can find the record easily there.
Yeah, why don't we give a shout out to Ardio too?
We can. We fully endorse that service.
Yeah, well, anyway, this record, I think it's Polisa. I don't really know how to say it because it's got the weird accent beneath the C.
Is it the...
I don't know what language that is.
I don't know. I was about to say, is it the tilde? But tilde, that's for Espanol, and that's above the letter.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. Maybe Italian?
Okay.
It's called Give You the Ghost. It's awesome. Check it out.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Are you ever... Good question. Are you ever going to see them live?
It takes a lot to get me to go to a concert these days.
You should probably frame it. It takes a lot to get you out of the house these days.
Oh, that's not true.
I know, I'm kidding.
I go outside a lot. It takes a lot to get me out of my 3-mile radius.
Okay. So, yeah, if they play within 3 miles of your house, you might go see them.
Or they're called the National.
Okay. All right, what else do you have for us?
I have an application called, this is an iOS application for both the iPad and the iPhone, and it is called Stock Touch. The whole thing is a grid, right? And each company becomes a square in the grid, and it's colored by either green when it's up and red when it's down, black when it's neutral. And basically, you can manipulate this entire grid and recategorize things and see how they relate. And then you can keep getting deeper into the grid, and then you see, you know, how the stock is doing over time, relevant news stories, et cetera, et cetera. The interface is sort of the selling point. So it's like you quickly, without even seeing what you're looking at, you can see, wow, everything's red today. Shit hit the fan.
Sure.
Or
there's been a lot of suicides today. People are jumping off the top of buildings.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And like, yeah, it's really cool. Pretty expensive. It's $5.
Are you interested or are planning in investing in the stock market?
Yeah, I mean, I have some small stuff.
What do you have, like Halliburton?
Yeah, a lot of Halliburton.
No, but seriously, what stocks do you have? What's your blue chips? I'm just kidding.
It's just a mutual fund.
Oh, got it, yes.
Yeah. I control.
Okay, yeah, for your retirement
right.
plans and such.
Right.
Got it.
Exactly.
But no individual stocks in pets.com?
No. I'm probably going to get in on Groupon right when it's at the bottom.
Well, good. Thank you for those recommendations, Scott. Those are exactly what you're brought on the show for varied and interesting recommendations.
Okay. Goodbye.
Today we'll be sitting down with Jesse Barnett, the vocalist from Orange County hardcore band Stick to Your Guns, who just put out their third full-length on Sumerian Records called Diamond. It's a pretty spectacular record. I recommend you checking it out. I've known Jesse for a while. I actually helped sign his band to Century Media Records a few years ago. And I always really thought he was really cool. I mean, he's a younger kid, younger than I am. And him and I immediately connected because I felt like he, you know, embodied a lot of the same values that, you know, I personally did when I first started to get into hardcore. And it felt like he was much older than his age indicated. And he's always been pretty outspoken about his band's views and his own personal views. So I thought it'd be a really interesting conversation that we could have. You're joining us in the middle of a conversation that we're having about girls being on tour and trying to maintain relationships while on the road.
That was one of the things, like, when I, just because I was, like, when, you know, whatever, maybe it was, like, when Taken had just kind of started to reach the point where it's like people knew who we were. Yeah. I was working at Bionic, the independent record store. Oh. And
wasn't that in Fullerton?
There was one in Fullerton, there was one in Huntington.
Okay,
yeah,
I remember
yeah.
the one in Fullerton.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yeah. And so it was funny because it's like I was always like in high school and everything. It's like I had no problem like speaking to girls and like I had relationships, but I was always the type of guy. When a girl showed me any attention, I was like, yeah, dude, like, totally, like, let's hang out. Like, I don't know why it was like,
same way, man.
Yeah, and I don't really know why there was like a feeling of inadequacy from that point.
Yeah.
But it was just like, and so then once the band reached some level of stature, and then I had girls that were talking to me just for that reason.
Yeah.
But again, I'm from that standpoint.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
And so I was just like, yeah, of course I'll hang out with you. And then I realized like. You know, whatever, we would make out, and then, like, you know, a few weeks later, it's like, these girls suck, like, yeah. they're like, or they had nothing behind them,
yeah,
and it's
exactly.
like, I was, like, a, you know, a puzzle piece for their, whatever they were looking for, and it was just,
scrapbook
like,
or whatever.
Totally, like, some story that they could tell their girlfriends, yeah, and it was yeah. just, like, it boggled my mind, where it was, like, that was their goal,
yeah,
and so it's, like,
which is crazy, because that was the same way, like, when we first started going on tour, the same thing, and I would do who knows what with who, whatever,
of course, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then it would just, I would be like, I love this girl.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You'd be like, I am into you. Like,
exactly.
This is a
like,
feeling.
Yeah, like, you live in Seattle, I live in Orange County, hey, we'll make it work, whatever.
Right, right,
and
right.
they're just kind of just like, all right, see ya. Like, you know, you stayed at my house for the night, bye. And I was just like, broke my heart.
Right, it was like a role reversal. Like, usually the guys... It's like the guys are the ones that are like, I'll roll the top for a night, I'll totally nail this chick and be on, moving on the next
it's
one.
It's weird, man. It's really weird.
Well, I think that just speaks to the your sensitive nature. Like, I mean, by the way, we're recording. And obviously, I'll
Oh, yeah, no, it's fine.
But the how I've always known you, like my first experience was like stick to your guns and like kind of you in general. Was obviously like when I was working at the label and like talking to you guys just from like a signing perspective.
From Century Media. I remember we were talking about with
Abacus.
Yeah.
That was the first time I met you.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
when you guys came up
to the office and everything.
And then we ate at the shitty airport diner because I thought that would be funny to take bands to for some reason. And so, yeah, I was remembering it was like, yeah, it was you. I'm pretty sure your old drummer Casey was there.
Yeah,
and
I'm
pretty
Justin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I think it was also
Pat. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, but yeah, I just remember meeting you guys. And it's like, I was aware of the band, obviously, prior to that.
Yeah.
But it was really interesting because I always found what I had known from Stick to Your Guns beforehand was the fact that, you know, you guys were, for all intents and purposes, like, you know, a comeback kiddish type hardcore band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you didn't play those type of shows, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you played whatever was available, which at the time was, you know, whatever, Metallica-ish hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, like meeting you guys and getting to know you over the course of that time, it was an interesting juxtaposition. Anyways, so what I always found interesting about you guys was the fact that you are a hardcore kid, tried and true. Like but you like obviously other styles of music.
Absolutely.
And I mean, you're wearing an MDC shirt and you're seeing Thrice tonight. There's...
No, absolutely. Yeah. Wear my MDC shirt to the Thrice show.
Right. And I always found it interesting where it was like, you always wore your influences in your sleeve and you didn't hide, you know, like where you come from and what you are. But then whatever, I'm going to use a band like Trapped Under Ice as an example. Like the kids that are into Trapped Under Ice would turn their nose at Stick to Your Guns.
Absolutely.
Like, and so did you feel that pretty much since the beginning?
Well, it was weird because you know, growing, like going to Showcase Theater when I was growing up, being dropped off by our friend's parents or whatever,
right,
in a fucking minivan, you know, as embarrassing as that was, but you know, you do anything for hardcore.
Uh-huh.
So just going there and then see, you know, there's a bill like Hurricane Rana, Every Time I Die, Bleeding Through, 18 Visions, Martyr AD, whatever.
Right.
That was actually an actual show that I went to. I'm nervous. Still to this day, one of the most insane shows.
Yeah.
So seeing a bunch of different styles like that in a bill, I don't think happens as often anymore. And I felt like that happened a hell of a lot more than it does now.
Sure.
So when we started our band, we kind of just took every genre that was happening that night and just kind of mixed it into one like clusterfuck.
Sure.
And so, but to me, it took a while of us touring to realize, and I think it was when we did a tour, we did like a week tour with Warriors and Blacklisted.
Yep.
That's when it really became like known to me. Cause to me, I was always like, I'm just doing what
right
I thought I was supposed to be doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I had to be told that we're not a hardcore band at first. You know what I mean? Cause I was
right.
Like, okay, well, I'm just pretty much just mimicking everything I saw at Showcase Theater.
Well, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do when you're a kid.
Absolutely.
Totally.
And I think it was, I mean, I don't mean to name names in a bad way or anything, but George from Blacklisted.
Right.
That's the singer, right?
You're right, yeah.
Everyone else in the band was super cool. And George, not that he wasn't cool, but he was very just like standoffish, you know what I mean?
He's a very strange character to begin
absolutely,
with. Right.
Which I later found out. but everyone in the band was so fucking nice to us, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Well, actually, a little side note really quick.
Sure.
They actually, the guitar player and one other guy, were staring at me for
mm-hmm.
the first 3 or 4 days, like in a not a cool way. And we were just going, oh, fuck.
Yeah, you're like,
sucks.
Cool.
Like, yeah, exactly. And then eventually we were playing at the Boardwalk in like Sacramento, Orange Vale, or wherever.
Right.
And he's like, yo, come here. I forget his name. Fuck, it's going to suck. I'm just like, oh, shit, here we go. You know, I'm super young. Still, I was very young
totally.
At the time. So I was scared shitless. And he goes, what's up? I'm like, nothing.
Just touring
with you. Yeah, exactly. And then so we introduced ourselves. He goes, you look like just like a guy my girlfriend cheated on me with.
Ooh.
And he was like, I was like, oh, fuck. So that basically explained to me why he... So,
right.
I mean, obviously, if my girlfriend cheated on me with a guy who looked like another guy, I would automatically just have a dislike for their... You know what I mean?
Don't like you.
Exactly. But they ended up being the coolest guys, and they just, you know... But anyway, so yeah. So it was like, it was pretty much around that time.
Did George say something specifically?
He didn't really say anything
or it was
specific
just the
to me, but someone had told me or something. Yeah, like George said like something about us being a fake hardcore band.
Right.
Or whatever. You know,
sure,
or whatever. Maybe. Which, I mean, I understand like being from where hardcore is now that I've grown and learned more about hardcore and every day I'm learning more about hardcore.
Right.
It's like, I can understand how hardcore started and it's supposed to be this very tight-knit club of people that, you know, and they're supposed to say fuck you to everything that's not hardcore. So I understand it from that point.
Right.
But if we're facing facts, it's just not how it is anymore. It's not, you know, it's like
mm-hmm.
talking with Bill Stevenson when he was telling me about all the stories about him being in Black Flag and Descendants was just the fucking craziest thing.
Oh, I can imagine.
Just even just sitting and talking with him. He was just like, you know, it's nowadays, it's just different. Not
right.
that it's better or worse or anything. It's just
yeah.
different. And every, you know, every generation, it's just going to get more and more different. So
of course.
Coming from someone like Bill Stevenson, who's actually, I feel, allowed to say something like that.
Yeah, you're like,
and a guy
you've done a few things. Yeah.
Absolutely. And a guy who I feel is allowed to be, I very rarely find people who I think are allowed to be elitist or about music and stuff like that.
Right.
he's one of them.
Sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know, he's
you get the pass.
Exactly.
Sure.
He's allowed to, but he's not. You know what I mean?
Right.
He came in, I remember the first couple of days, he came into the room, and he's funny because he'll always enter a room, like he'll go home for the night, then he'll come back to work, but he enters the room mid-conversation like he never left. So that was awesome. I loved it. It was never
that's
like,
so cool.
Oh, weird, like, hey, so what's up? It was just like,
right.
He'll just walk in the door, hey, have you guys heard this band, Misery Signals? You know what I mean? And to him, this whole...
Oh, he's unwrapping like a scene.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That he has no idea that he started. You know what I mean? That,
right.
In one way or another.
Of course.
So, and then he's like, that's just like, that's my new favorite band. That's the craziest thing ever. And just, it's weird hearing someone like Bill Stevenson, who was in these bands, saying that Misery Signals is his new favorite band.
That's really weird.
You know what I mean? So, it's just, yeah, he, it's just, you know.
So
that,
he, like, having that conversation was a pretty, like, obviously leveling experience for you?
It became... For me, it was like I was okay. You know, it just made me feel okay. Like,
right.
Like, this fucking dude who started this whole thing that I love
right.
pretty
right.
much. You know, he he's just he was just a stand-up dude, and it made me feel better about the whole situation.
Yeah.
Made the recording experience, you know, because obviously I have the hardcore fantasy, because it's like you said, it's like I've been going to hardcore shows for, you know, it's weird because all these kids who, like you said, turned their nose to us, who were like, yeah, man, I've been going to hardcore shows since 2008. It's like, my band started in 2003.
Right,
and
right.
And then I was going to hardcore shows, you know, at least since 1999. It's like, how am I not allowed in your club? You know what I mean? It's like,
oh, totally.
It's weird. It's like this part, I feel like I was this kid who's been going to this party this entire time. And then all of a sudden I show up one day and they're like, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, well, using that same analogy, it's definitely like you're in another room and you're like having fun,
yeah.
And then it's like that you try to go, you know, like you walk through a hallway to go to the bathroom, and then like you get stared down that hallway, and you're just like, "Yo, really? Like, what? I've been here for years, dude."
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's I always found that interesting.
So I mean, I think but also just a maturity thing for me, just to kind of drop the hardcore fantasy thing. Like we're not going to be accepted by those kids, which is fine because those kids don't buy records.
Sure.
You know what I mean? At least not like...
Yeah.
You know.
I totally understand what you're saying.
So, or even, you know, so or whatever.
And you're not saying it's like, well, those kids don't buy records, so fuck them.
Yeah,
it's like,
no, absolutely. It's like they're not really going to... They're just kind of into the flavor of the month anyway, which I am completely guilty of that all the time.
Of course.
You know what I mean? But, you know, there's like kids who like... I don't know how we've somehow managed to start this little cult following of people who really... done insane things like tattoo our lyrics or our logo on them. You know what I mean? So
right.
It's like, you know, it's crazy because I have a propaganda tattoo and terror tattoo, and I just think, oh, that's normal. You know what I mean? But when people do that with my band, I just think it's the most insane thing.
Yeah, you're like, really? Yeah, no, because
I mean, it's just
right.
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I think that I'm the way I feel about propaganda, someone feels that way about my band. It's just,
right.
It's too much to grasp.
Yeah.
You know what
you,
I mean, so.
You won't be able to comprehend it for another 10 to 15 years.
I'm sure.
And so were you always like, were you born and raised in Southern California?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I was born in Long Beach.
Okay.
And then I was taken to my home in Costa Mesa.
Okay. Right. I was taken to my home. That's very formal. I appreciate that.
I didn't live in Long Beach.
Right.
Why I was born there, I don't know. But then I lived in Costa Mesa, like right by Triangle Square.
Okay.
For maybe until I was like six or something. And then we did the whole South County thing where I lived in Rancho Santa Margarita for a while.
Sure.
For a while, I mean like 18 years.
Right. For a while, as in my formative years. Right.
And then now I'm back in Huntington Beach. And
sure.
It's weird being back in Huntington and like Costa Mesa area because it's like, you know, like when I was there, I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't really, I don't feel, especially with me, who has the worst memory ever, you don't really remember a lot of things, but weird shit starts coming back to you.
It's like deja vu.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, crazy. And I went to my old street, and I went and saw my old house that I grew up in, and like, I'll do that every once in a while.
Right.
And it's just weird, because it's like, I thought my house was so big. Like,
yeah.
The tree in the front was enormous. You
right,
know?
Right,
and now
right.
I go back, I'm like, that's just the normal house.
Right. I'm almost taller than this tree. Right, yeah.
Exactly. So it's crazy, man. It was a... I like doing that kind of shit. I'm sure the people who live there are probably like, fuck, that car.
Yeah, who's that? Who's that guy? That every week, it's like, seriously, that guy with tattoos is out front again. Should we call the cops again?
Yeah, man, I just have a lot of good memories there. So, yeah, it's cool being back up in this area. I really like it.
Yeah, that's cool. And so did you, like, when did you kind of, you know, like, how was your high school experience and kind of family life? And, like, when did music kind of become a part of your life from that perspective?
Well, very young. I had a sister... fortunately,
right.
And an older brother, fortunately, who I didn't like. You find that I didn't find hardcore through like Korn and Limp Bizkit. You know
okay.
what I mean? Which I'm not knocking you if you did.
Right.
But I had an older sister who had Black Flag and Minor Threat and Sepultura cassette tapes, and a brother who grew up just, you know, bleaching his hair, skateboarding, and he was a Fat Records kid. You
yeah.
know what I mean? So it's like,
oh, dude, both of those are amazing entry points.
Absolutely. So it's just like I think I got lucky with like. Got getting to enter through that area, and I think that's why where at least hearing its punk influence definitely comes from too. Where that whole thing was very important to me. So it's like, I don't know, I think it's weird when I hear bands that are like people are like, oh, check out this band. I can't even give an example right now, but
right.
And I'll listen to them, and they, you know, they sound like Minor Threat or whatever, because that's just like
it's
just cool to do that or whatever. And I'm just like, well, I've listened to this record. I've listened to this type of music since I was very young. Even.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's almost just like played out for me.
Of course.
So, whereas, you know, I'm trying to not sound bitter because I'm definitely not or jaded, but it's
right,
just
right.
like, you know, when the American Hardcore DVD came out and then 150 bands started just
yes.
trying to rip off Negative Approach or whatever.
Of course.
So, you know, that whole thing became, when that DVD came out, I even called that with my friends. Watch all these fucking
right.
bands start because of this DVD, and sure enough, it did. And,
oh, totally.
It just pissed me off that it was just like, everyone thought that was the coolest fucking thing. Just...
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways.
So they, no, but the, so your brother and sister, they both, like, how much older were they than you?
My older sister is very, she's, with her being, she lived in Japan for a while, and now
right.
she's living in Florida. And
okay.
She's actually my half-sister.
Okay.
Different mom, same dad. She's mid-30s.
Okay,
like,
sure.
I'm 24.
Sure.
And my brother is 28. So
so did you feel that they kind of like, did they sort of take you under their wing in a way where they were kind of like exposing you to these records? Or did you just kind of see it in their collection and you're like, that looks cool?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely, my sister never really lived with us. And she lived with us in our old house in Costa Mesa.
Got it.
And we moved into our other place. She never lived with us.
Got it.
So more my brother and, you know, him being a teenager, you can't listen to records at normal volume.
No, yeah.
So
yeah.
When he's in his room, I have no other choice but to hear.
You're like, through osmosis, I'm listening to these records even though I have no choice. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and so everything he did, it got to the point where he would have to tell my mom, like, you know, he needs to chill out because, like, he would buy a shirt, I'd go buy the same shirt. He'd buy his shoes, buy the same
okay,
shirt. He was
yeah.
an enormous, anything he did, I literally would go, okay, cool, got a new skateboard, got
yeah.
to get that. You know what I mean?
Very
mom,
calculated, right?
And my mom would go like, okay, well, you know, it's fair, you know, and then, but then it looks, you know, he leaves his room in the morning and sees me looking exactly like him. He's like, what the fuck, man? You know, it's hard to have
yeah,
your own
yeah.
style. And
you're like, yo, my little brother's biting
biter, yeah.
right? That's incredible.
So, yeah, so just...
Like, were you in junior high when this stuff started to kind of first happen for you, or like early high school?
No, that was like elementary school.
Oh, wow.
Like really,
that's impressive.
Really young. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, junior high, that's when I started getting like very, I got very James Hart about life.
Okay.
And, you know, I fucking had the black hair with the streak in the front, you know,
sure,
the red
sure.
streak in the front
of
or
course.
Whatever, that whole fashion thing. Creepers,
sure.
Which I was happy to say that I was a scene kid before, like the whole scene thing became
well,
like enormously huge.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that was me in junior high, and then in high school became like the more like hardcore kid. I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
while still listening to, you know, while still loving 18 Visions and stuff, but
sure,
more
sure.
just like, you know,
that you adapted your style at
absolutely.
That point. Like
yeah.
you when you started to, because obviously all you do in elementary school, junior high, and most of high school is just like figure yourself out.
Absolutely. So, and then even stuff like one of my best friends, Noah,
mm-hmm.
who was the original bass player of Six Year Guns, you know, his parents would take us to the Monterey Jazz Festival
oh,
and
cool.
stuff like that. So it's just like you said, just so much music all the time. You
right.
know what I mean? So it was never just hardcore for me,
mm-hmm.
and which I thought was cool because you know, I mean, punk has always stayed like Propaganda will always be my favorite band just for the fact of. Yeah, right now at this moment, I might want to listen to someone else instead of Propaganda, but they have remained.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean.
Remain
like,
constant,
exactly. So it's like the punk and hark will always be like that for me.
Yeah,
until I'm dead. But
of
there's
course.
Definitely gonna be like, okay, I'm done with this right now. I'm gonna put in some Adele or whatever it is.
Right,
you know?
You're always gonna view yourself a hardcore kid because that's the framework in which you were raised in. Regardless of if you're listening to, you know, Saggy Rose or whatever. It's
no,
like
no, absolutely. And it was it's weird too because even just like when I found out what straight edge was, because I found and then. From being like a, you know, a punk, I
mm-hmm.
guess you could say.
Sure.
I found out my other friends, you know what I mean? Where that's how I found out my friends in junior high because they're brothers, same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
all
yeah.
their brothers listening to the same shit. So that's how I found out my friends. And then I found out what Straight Edge was. And that's when I was just like, someone explained that to me. And I was just like, oh my God. This
You're like, that's me.
Yeah, exactly. It was
yeah.
just like, this is me. I just didn't know how to say it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So that was awesome. And then had all the older brothers, you know. And it's weird because, like, all of the friends that I had, the group I had gone into, all of their older brothers were friends. My brother was never part of it. It was never, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
it was like, we'd always hang out. It was really weird. They even went to the Santa Margarita Catholic fucking high school.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
All together. But they were all straight edge, and my brother were like, smoke pot or whatever.
Sure.
Did. So that was obviously a
right.
big no-no.
Right. You don't cross those lines.
Absolutely.
We can't speak to a person who smokes weed, especially in high school, because we were very straight edge.
So, yeah, it's just, yeah, it's a
So when did you, like, as you were kind of developing this, like, did you always have the idea, like, I really want to play in bands, and, like, I want to start to put this together, or
yes.
how did that kind of...
Well, me and my brother wrote a punk song about me burning down a school.
Impressive.
My school.
Impressive.
Some shit like that.
Yeah.
It was stupid. But but that started real, that was just, like I said, really fucking young. So I think I always wanted to, and then see my brother being in all these different punk bands and my brother having band practice too. Also all other things that influenced just the music part of it. You know what I mean? Like, I remember their drummer came over to our house and he had like one tattoo. I remember being like, oh, you know, like the craziest fucking thing I've ever
seen. Like,
you
know, like a new dawn and come up. Oh, I see.
Like, he came in, he had like dyed hair and like little plugs and a tattoo. And I remember looking at my mom like, is he allowed in our house? Like, you know what I mean? Because I figured my mom
totally
kind of viewed things at that point where I think she's, you know, look at me now. It's like she's completely desensitized. She looks at it like art now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Whereas before she was just like, I got tattooed. You know, it was fucking end of my life.
Right.
But, so that was like, holy shit. And then, so I would just watch them practice in the garage and then, you know, they would cover like Boyz II Fire too. So that's, you know, it slowly just kind of became a thing into just whatever it is now.
Right. Did you pick up an instrument around that time too?
Yeah, guitar. And the cool thing about, which was, I was talking about this with my girlfriend recently. It's weird because my parents never really played instruments except for like in high school, you know, like, oh, I'm in band. So.
Yeah, I'm playing clarinet or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's why my mom played clarinet. And, but like, we always had guitars and piano and drums and trumpet.
Stuff just sitting around.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just like, now I think about it now, like, why would the fuck was that? You know what I mean?
Are these suggestions? Like, I don't, is this,
So, I mean, I just learned pretty much guitar from my brother. I was, well, my mom got us both lessons. She's like, hey, what do you guys want to do? And ultimately, like I was saying before, my brother said guitar, so I immediately said guitar.
Yeah, guitar.
My brother's like, fuck, dude. He's like, all right, how about this? You play drums, you take drum lessons, I'll take guitar lessons, and that way we can play together. And then I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great suggestion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did drum lessons, and then, you know, that lasted a month. That shit just got, I don't know, it just got weird. Because she was trying to teach me, like, you know, obviously the classical style. She didn't know, I just wanted to go,
dah! Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? but luckily, she just, I learned a couple lessons, and I took it from there. And drums was my first instrument, and I played drums in a bunch of bands and stuff like that.
So what was it? What was your first band? What was the first band you sunk your teeth into?
The first band that I ever played in was a band called Until Death We Part.
Ooh, that's a good name.
Yeah. And I remember, I really... you know Rolly?
Yes.
He was texting me around.
Okay.
I remember he was like, I loved him. Because he was in, what was it, Fallen Angel?
Yep.
And all those bands. So that whole like metal core style,
sure.
You know what I mean? Became, that's what I just...
latched on to.
Yeah. So hard. Especially, and I think the reason for that was because I was a drummer. Those style of drums was just more interesting to me.
100%.
You know what I mean? So it became, what was that, Troy, right?
Yeah.
Would he play drums Taken?
Yep.
And also Bleeding Through and all that shit. I thought he was just like, you know.
Oh,
like,
he's a ridiculous drummer.
Holy shit, yeah.
Yep.
So, you know, like watching him play and stuff like that. So all that kind of music just became way more interesting to me. Where now as I'm older, I think like the more a drummer can just like hold it together as opposed to being a show off.
Sure.
Is that style.
Right. I mean, and that's what you learn as you get older.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
So I think that, I think, and then just
playing. Did you guys play out and everything like that?
What do you mean? Like,
did you guys play shows with the first band and everything like that?
Oh, yeah. We played a bunch of shows. And
okay.
It was weird. And...
So that was kind of like your first experience. And so like once you played those first couple shows, you were pretty much like, was that it? You're like, all right, like this is pretty much what I wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it was actually the drummer of my brother's old band I was hanging with a tattoo.
Okay.
Sang.
Okay.
For this band. So,
Your brother play in that band with
you? Yeah, he played guitar as well. So he had always,
I'm surprised your brother never killed you. I mean, like, not in a bad way, but just like, because you guys have, I mean, I know, like, obviously I know casually your relationship and seeing
absolutely.
The way that you guys are with one another. But it's just funny because you had, like.
I thank weed for that because I feel like if he. If he was a straight edge kid, he would have fucking murdered me by
that's
now.
If he had the mellowing agent of weed,
yeah.
He was able to tolerate all that.
He would
that.
Just be like, fuck this dude. Just like, you know, smoke or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he's like, all right, it's not that big of a deal.
Right.
You know?
That's pretty cool.
Still, like, he's teaching me how to surf right now. Like, we've been, you know, whatever, that thing, which I'm sure has got to be frustrating as well. So
sure.
He's always just been, he's been a really good brother. So
that's great.
You know, and he's... You know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. He's played Stick to Your Guns. You know, he went to Colombia, down South America with us. And he did a bunch of U.S. tours. And
right.
So he's been awesome. But,
and so when did the kind of formation of Stick to Your Guns start to, you know, set in?
I was playing in a band called Sydney Raven.
Okay.
And playing drums. And then I remember talking with him, like, hey, I'm going to start. Like, I'm just going to start with a band. The intention at first was Hatebreed. You know what I mean? Because I think everyone.
And did you, and you wanted to sing for that? Like, or did you?
I was playing guitar, actually.
Okay,
I was
got it.
I wanted to play guitar. Because the drum thing I was liking, I was getting just kind of bored. You know what I mean? Like, after playing the same, like, over and over and over. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I'm kind of over this.
Right.
So I was like, okay, I'm a, you know, size of the band, and they all made fun of me or whatever. Saying like, oh, yeah, whatever, dude.
Sure. Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly. Type of thing. Like, not like maliciously. You know?
Right.
I wasn't like a victim of anything, but
yeah,
they were definitely just like, oh, okay, cool, whatever. And that kind of, I did a 3-song demo. My brother, luckily, at the time was, it's weird. Now that I'm saying this out loud, he's always just there.
Yeah, he's always there. Like, he, whatever you need, like, he fills that role. That's great,
it's
though.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
He was doing Pro Tools. He had just learned how to start doing Pro Tools. Fucking insane. Now that I'm thinking about it right now. But, so I was like, hey, I want to record this demo or whatever. Like, all right, so I did drums, bass, guitar, and I didn't do any vocals or anything on it. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. But eventually I was like, fuck it, I'll write some lyrics or whatever, and I did these vocals and did this demo, and me and my friend Noah, we had the intention of being a straight edge band.
Okay.
But my friend Noah wasn't straight edge.
Right.
And we couldn't find any other bass players. And I thought that you can be like, okay, just won't be straight edge.
Sure.
So, and then we started going to show Death Star or whatever, you know, playing down the street from us, and then just putting all the demos in people's fucking.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's like dropping them off.
That whole thing.
Yeah.
Hustling, or
whatever
you want to call it.
So you guys were just like distributing them to some, you know, bands in the area just to like
tour kids,
to like play shows, or to like look for other members.
We did that once, and it was, for me, it's very it was especially at that time, it was very hard for me to put myself out there like that.
Of course.
So I did it once, and even like I got so like
yeah
a dirty feeling almost from it. Not like I felt like I was whoring myself out, because I wasn't charging any money for it,
right?
But so it was just whatever. So we just started hopping on these shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then, sure enough, one thing led to another. There, I remember I gave the demo to one of my friend of mine who was called Bubba, and I think he calls himself Adrian now.
Mm-hmm.
He was playing in Seven Generations and stuff. Like, he was like the part of the whole Dana Point crew.
Sure.
And I gave it to him, and he was he's always been like the most like on point hardcore kid. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, true hardcore and stuff like that. So I gave it to him, and he was like, "Yeah, this is cool." You know, he's like, "It's straight edge death metal." You know, it's what he called it, just like poking me. And I was like, yeah, whatever, you fucking idiot.
Mm-hmm.
He was always really cool, too. He was super supportive, which I was blown away by now that I, like,
look back
on it and realize. And, there was a bunch of kids, Sean Aguilar and some other kids. They're playing a band called, like, Archetypes right now something like that. Anyways. We played a show at Club Pearl. You remember that place? It's now Lake Forest Buffalo Wild Wings.
Oh, yeah.
That used to be a place called Club Pearl, where it was like
weird.
It was like a club.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Somehow, wherever there's an open room, some shitty hardcore kid.
Sure. Well, of course they'll be like, well, especially in Southern Orange County, where it's like, because there's no venues, obviously. So
we played there, and our first show, there was people there, and they were just hitting each other or whatever, and it was just weird. You know, we got on a bunch of shows, and
was it like you were basically just kind of like you and Noah were at the core, and you kind of were just like filling people in as you, were you still doing guitar at the time? Obviously,
I kind of skipped some parts where I just eventually said fuck it, I'll sing.
Okay,
but Casey, I had known him through my parents would take me to church all the time, and I was very involved in church at that time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I was a Christian, but it was kind of just like, I still had it very drilled into my head where it's like, I should just do this whole thing on Sunday, because if I don't, I'll go to hell.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's why now I'm so, not bitter, but just outspoken kind of against those kinds of things, because I was, forced as a kid to do that. But, so I met Casey, and Casey was an awesome drummer. And he was just this kid who was just like, he skated, and he was pretty much like semi-professional. Like, the kid would just, the things he could do on a skateboard blew my mind.
Really?
Especially for then, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, but then, he could play any instrument, and I showed him Killing Theory.
Oh, of course. I showed him Killing Theory. They learned this.
Yeah, and then he's like, that's when he'd first ever heard a blast beat.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, what is he doing? Like, he didn't get it, you know what I mean? And then I showed him, like, yeah, you just go really fast, and then the feet go with the sticks or whatever, or the, you know.
Yeah.
And then he, of course, it took him 30 minutes, and he's just like, like he's just he
nailed it.
Yeah, still is that way. You know what I mean? So I was just like, this kid who's the only, I don't want to call it hardcore, but like, you know, that style of aggressive music that he's ever heard is Killing Theory.
Sure.
And so eventually, like, I started kind of like twisting him more toward like showing like Christian hardcore, so he'd be more like into it, you know, like Hope's Fall. And,
right.
Or, you know, that whole.
Like a comfortable transition.
Exactly, sure. Exactly. And so he just, you know, I kind of suckered him into that way, and then he was the drummer, and then we got our friend dude Justin, who I went to school with, and he played.
So people just kind of started to fill in those roles, Curtis
and everything like that. So, and then we played these shows, and with those dudes, and when we started touring, is kind of when it all started like kind of falling apart, because Curtis is like, I'm a grown person, I can't be doing this, you know? What I mean? How is he to know that it took this long for us to even start trying to make some sort of living off of it, you know what I mean?
So right.
He definitely probably did the right thing, whether it's the thing he wanted to do or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
To have to walk away, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I found interesting, like, around that, because you guys released, like, your first full-length on... Well, I mean, you recorded it on your own, and then obviously hooked up with... I can't remember the name.
Disease Burning.
There you go. And so it's like, around that time, it seemed to me it was really funny, because it's like, you're... This is going to sound silly, but your sweatshirt preceded you.
Oh, absolutely.
Where for anybody that obviously, well, there's a lot of people that listen to this show that aren't from Southern California, but, and I'm sure it's like this in a lot of other cities where it's like a band starts and kind of gets a following, but then they have a piece of merchandise where it's just like, you see it, you're just like, where is this?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
And so we're
talking about the move hoodies.
Of course, 100%. Where it's like, you, all of a sudden you just started to see this, you know, this for... referencing this sweatshirt where basically it said move on the front of it and it had stick to your guns on the hood. And like, it was amazing on two parts. One, it was obviously really simple. And there was a gigantic amount of text on the back with your lyrics, which is, I thought it was unbelievable, because it was just like, dude, literally this is a font. Like it's perfect. Yeah. But the placement and the way you guys did it was just like, oh, like people hadn't really done that before, but it was just so funny to kind of watch that hit. And then all of a sudden be just like you would see like three or four of these pieces of merch at a show.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I'm sure at that point, because it's like, you know, your record come out, and like obviously that merch just did insanely well for you guys. And then obviously, you know, things started to pick up from that point. And then that's when you guys were obviously touring at a more semi-regular level.
Absolutely.
And so like, how did that, in your own mind, how are you reconciling the fact where it's just like, my God, like this... People were probably buying that merch that could give a shit about your band in a way.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it was like a fashion statement.
It was weird too, because I had really not heard anything but negative things about it. But it was weird. On one hand, I'm hearing like, okay, this everyone hates this hoodie.
Right.
But then I'm looking at the numbers of how many we're selling on this hand. I'm just like, this isn't adding up.
At all. Right, you know what I mean? Who is buying this?
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, this fucking stupid. Trying to be Bane ripoff hoodie, you know what I mean?
And then,
you know what I mean? Like, I didn't hear one good thing said about the hoodie.
Right.
But I'm looking over here, it's like, we just sold like 100 in one day. You know, it's like,
you know, this is like, weird.
That's funny to say. Another thing I like talking with you is that I don't have to, like, when I do other interviews and they talk about us growing up, I kind of try to, like, not bullshit things, but kind of just say things that will make more sense to them. But I like the fact that we can talk about people and you'll know who I'm talking about.
Right.
We can talk about these little tiny labels.
There's a context.
We can talk
about
cities. Like, I don't have to say, like, oh, from Orange County, we're in Orange County. And I have to say the most famous city. Like, oh,
we're near Anaheim.
Yeah, exactly.
We're near Disneyland. Yeah.
Exactly. You know what I mean? I can.
Right.
So, anyways. That's
interesting. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad we have these conversations. And so, what I've always found it awesome about you guys as well, because, you know, kind of going back to the whole, you know, whatever, the hardcore purist that turns his nose at a lot of bands.
Yeah.
You guys now play, and pretty much over your entire career, and I always feel weird when I say career and referencing a band, but I mean, that's what it is.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so your entire career is you've played with typically, you know, whatever, metallic hardcore bands, and it could be a band like, you know, Winds of Plague to Suicide Silence, whatever.
Yeah.
To, you know, everything that's happening right now, Born of Osiris, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And you guys can play with those bands and be different enough to where you stand out at a show and kids will be receptive towards it, because it doesn't sound like all the other four bands in the bill.
Absolutely.
And so have you noticed that being, I mean, obviously it's been successful for you guys, and that's kind of...
Well, I think the reason why that works so well is because on a show like that, we definitely use to our advantage the fact that we know that we're the token hardcore band on the tour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the same way fucking Terror has their absolute geniuses when they go on tour with bands like Amir.
Of course.
You know what I mean? That's how they keep their, you know, that's how Scott is 30 some odd years old and is still allowing to tour.
Right.
You know, it's because he's not being a piece of shit about it. Whereas, you know, maybe if he was playing with Despair, he might have been a piece of shit about it.
Totally.
But now that he's older and more mature and goes, okay, this is kind of how this game works.
Sure.
So I want to continue touring, which I love to, and I love doing this band.
Right.
I got to do some things like this.
Sure.
With Amir. So, and Amir, which some of the coolest fucking dudes. I love those guys. Anyways.
Right.
They go on tour with Amir, and these kids are just like, what the fuck is this? Like,
sure.
This is the craziest, most in-my-face shit I've ever seen. You know what I mean? You put Scott Vogel in front of a 14-year-old kid who doesn't really know what hardcore is. It's like...
Dude, that's actually the point I was going to make, is the fact that, you know, bands like you guys and Terror that do play in front of those kids that they're not familiar, they get into a band that is technically proficient, like all those bands we were naming, because it's like, you know, they are, it's like, wow, dude, they, you know, crazy blast beats or whatever.
Exactly.
And then they see something that's simplified, but insanely aggressive. Like, basically it's like a gateway hardcore band.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And so then that way you feel like you can obviously share who you are, what you've been into, what inspires you lyrically. And it's like, these kids aren't typically exposed to that type of stuff.
Absolutely.
Do you get that feedback from kids too?
Absolutely. There'll be kids like, I think what it is they just know that they like loud screaming music.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And then obviously, you know, the thing that's going to be most available to them are going to be bands like, you know, like Slipknot, or even like, you know, bands like Born of Osiris or shit, or Suicide Silence.
Yep.
That you see a Hot Topic at the mall.
Of course.
You know what I mean? So they listen to it and just hear like, and they just go, holy fuck, yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
This is aggressive. This will probably piss my parents off.
Exactly.
Right.
Absolutely. And, you know, this makes sense to me. And then you get a band like Terror, even like us, where I go up and say, like, yeah, we do the same thing, but this is why I'm doing it.
Right.
You know, and this, you know, this is the things that I feel, and this is, you know, I try to be outspoken very much about the things that we...
Yeah, your the messaging behind the band, right?
Absolutely. And kids will come up and be like, oh, I feel that, you know, that's how I feel. You know what I mean? And so I think that with those two things together,
it automatically sets you apart.
Yeah, and it works very well. Because, you know, a lot of those metal bands, they kind of, I'm not saying that they're boring, because what they're doing is way more technically advanced than
anything
we're doing.
They play circles around you.
Absolutely. But they're kind of just standing around.
Sure.
So the advantage that we have by playing, you know, are simplified. I mean, obviously, you know, we have parts that are...
There is talent behind what you're doing, right? You are clearly not just playing.
I just want to state that just so Chris listens to this. He doesn't think that I'm saying he's playing power chords or whatever.
Right.
Because he tries very hard not to just like, if there's a riff that's too simple, he'll try to play the same riff, but try to figure out a way to make it complicated.
Right. Put some bells and whistles on it.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Which is annoying, but also awesome.
right.
So we get to run around and, you know, I think that also, they're like, you know, it's like something to look at. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, and the shit too is that now that I'm realizing with these other bands is like, I used to think like lights and like scrims and all that shit. I was like, that shit's fucking whack and cheesy and shit like that.
Right.
Banners or whatever.
Sure.
But now it's like, you know, these bands are spending their own money on this shit and offering these kids a show for a $25 ticket.
Yeah.
Instead of just standing on stage and just being like, hey, check us out for $25. So it's kind of like like I said, as I'm growing up and older and realizing other things, like,
sure,
I do think that bands who try to put on some sort of a stage show, I think that shit's fucking cool.
Yeah, it's respectable, as opposed to, like, obviously the context in which you were viewing it previously was, like, okay, if you're playing at a VFW hall and you bring your ridiculous banner, it's just like, you know, what are you doing? Like, knock that shit off.
Absolutely.
But yeah, if you're playing at legitimate venues around the country, it's like, yeah, give them a show. They're going to a House of Blues show to see bands do something for
absolutely
them.
Absolutely. And we call certain venues banner venues and not banner venues. Like, we'll walk in and be like, this isn't a banner anymore.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. This will stay in the trailer.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's funny. And you know, it's cool also having guys like Josh James in our band now, who played in Casey Jones and Nevergreen Terrace or whatever.
Sure.
And then Chris from Walls of Jericho and stuff like that. there, it was cool, like, just because the transition for them into the band was really smooth, just because
they know
what to do, you know what I mean? And I always make the joke to my friends, and I'll tell, like, I don't know if Josh or Chris is in on this, but I call our like, I refer to our band as, like, a pound, like, okay. Or like a shelter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For washed up hardcore dudes.
That's amazing. Yeah, you're like, hey, your band is not doing much right now. You can come over.
It's kind of like what you were talking about before. You know, you went in, you picked the old dog and the thing. You know, that's you're
an adoptable, but you still want to play music. Like, come on. Yeah, that is absolutely incredible.
So I make that joke all the time, but obviously it's not true because they're,
right.
You know, they, you know,
they're still vital. It's not like they're rolling out in wheelchairs. You're just like,
no, absolutely. And it's like, you know, it's almost like, I know I'm not a wine person. I don't know anything about wine, but I know that the older the year is, the better it's supposed to be. So
right.
It definitely, it's more in that sense than it is in the other one I just said.
No, yeah. You just,
it's always fun to joke. I always call Chris an old man.
Right.
Sure, you know, we always joke about that kind of shit. So.
Yeah. And then, like you were saying, like, obviously once you started to tour, and like a lot of people don't get the perspective where it's like, once you do start to tour, you're going to have a lot of people that drop out of the band because,
absolutely.
I mean, some people experience that to a lesser degree because of, you know, whatever, they've been so on board and focused with what the band's ultimate goals are, but it's very difficult to get five people on the same page.
No, absolutely. And I think the reason I've been able to stay for so long is because I never really gave a fuck so much as far as like wanting a place to live or, mm-hmm. or wanting a car or anything like that. Like,
right.
Even growing up, like, my high school years, it consisted of me going freshman year and then me not going anymore. You know
uh-huh.
what I mean? Like, which is funny because my sophomore year,
mm-hmm.
I had this photography class that I didn't go to. Literally, I didn't go one time,
mm-hmm.
but I got my report card and it was a B. I got a B in the class. Somehow. I didn't go once, not once, and I somehow got a B. Anyways, and so I ended up doing my, not GED, but I did like Fresh Start.
Oh, okay.
Which basically I had to go to school once a week.
Okay.
And they just said, here's the curriculum for the week. You know, do it.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Oh, so
I didn't
you
take
did
finals.
You,
I didn't do any of that shit.
So basically, after freshman year of high school, you did not go to high school, but you got your degree based off of.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So I'm
okay.
a high school graduate, but it's like, you know, I did it.
Sure.
In the way that I was like, once I found out that was a program, I was like,
you're like,
give
this
me
is
that.
An option.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah
but
yeah,
I
yeah.
went to the guidance counselor, and she was like, well, we don't just give any fuckhead this. You know,
I hope she said it like that. That'd be a girl. I just give this fuckhead out. Yeah.
So I had to prove that, you know, because it's obviously a very, like, you have to be a responsible person.
Yeah.
Which at that time I definitely wasn't.
Sure.
So I had to get good grades she's like, get good grades for your next couple of things, like, do good on the next couple
right.
of tests, and they'll prove to me that you can do this. And then finally I signed off, took it home, had my mom sign it. And, you know, I'd been kicked out of my house a couple times, and I was actually living on my own in Laguna Beach in, like, some apartment sophomore year, you know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
Which is weird. I for some reason, I was always the dude who was like, so I wanted to grow up real quick, you know what I mean? Like, super, like, I didn't want
to
wait.
You're like,
for
I wanted to fast forward.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I was just living, you know, I was living on floors, and I was living on my own at all these places, but it's weird now that it's like, the band has now gotten me these things that I don't ever really care about. You know, I like have my own place now.
Right.
You know, and I've never in a million years imagined. So I think the fact that I never was really focused on, like, oh, I can't go on tour because, you know, I'm supposed to be an upstanding citizen. And,
right.
You know,
these practical things that
go
you're supposed
and
to
vote,
want.
And, you know, and jury duty or, you know, job and all that
yeah,
shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was kind of just like, but it wasn't me, like, it was kind of just me being lazy. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want any of that shit anyways.
Right.
So it's
right.
kind of like there was only one choice for me.
Okay.
Make this thing work. You know
sure.
what I mean? So.
So like as you started a tour and that, well, I mean, why were you kind of kicked out of your home, if you mind me asking?
Oh, no, it was just like, I wasn't really getting along with my mom. Like, I don't know what it was. I think I was just.
A lot of butting heads and
yeah,
yelling.
Yeah, I was super just angry for no reason whatsoever, which I think is the reason why I'm doing this music that I'm doing. And it gives
sure.
me a great outlet for it. You know what I mean? And also telling my mom, hey, like, I'm not going to school. I'm going to go on tour with this band. You
right.
know what I mean? And then she hears the kind of music it is. It's like. You know what I mean? Obviously, from my mom's standpoint, it's like, okay, well, what? No,
yeah, what?
You're not doing that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
this isn't a good end game.
Yeah, and
sure.
I was very much like, oh, you say I'm not doing it, so now I'm for sure
right.
doing
right.
it. You know
I'm
going
to prove, if you think that I'm wrong by doing this, I am going to prove you wrong.
Well, it's not even me trying to prove it wrong, it's just me saying, you're saying I'm not going to?
Right.
Well, I'm going to.
Got
you know
it.
What I mean? More of
sure.
just me just going against anything that
right.
she said. So I was living on my friend Matt's floor, and and stuff like that. And I got a job at a smoothie place.
Okay. Yeah, you were just making ends meet. And while you were doing that fresh start thing. And
Exactly.
Okay,
got it. And so the smoothie place, I remember I would work from open to close since I wasn't going to school.
I got time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I would take all these checks and I would actually end up buying my own tickets for, you know, we'd like pay to play.
Of course.
Sell our own tickets. So I would just buy all of my own tickets, spend all my money on it since I had nothing to spend money on.
Right.
I was living in my friend's house.
Sure.
And I would just give all our tickets away. You know what I mean? So we'd play Hoagies and then there'd be a bunch of people there for free. You know,
interesting.
Free
yeah.
Show or whatever, you know? So it ended up, I think things like that ended up working in our favor too. And,
wow. That's pretty interesting. Yeah. Cause usually, I mean, people would never recommend doing pay-to-play shows because obviously it's a terrible experience.
Oh,
but you were just like, well, this is what we had to do.
Yeah.
I have so much disposable income, I don't know what to do. You know, I got 500 extra bucks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would get like a $600 check and be like, oh, well, that's how much all these tickets are? Fuck it. Here's, you know what I mean? Like,
that's
I
incredible.
I remember one time I actually signed over, was it Eric?
Yeah.
Signed over one of my actual checks. Like, I didn't even have cash. I was like, fuck it, here. You know what I mean? Like,
that's incredible. Like, here's my paycheck.
Yeah, exactly.
Take it.
And then I just like went and handed out tickets to everybody. So
I could see where that would obviously, like, you know, they would see the fact that, oh wow, like there's a lot of kids showing up, and granted, you know, no one has to know that they're free tickets besides you and the rest of the band. And
And of course he did his whole like schmoozing thing.
Of course.
He'd be like, you know, hey man, you sell all your tickets, Remembering Never's here next week.
Yep.
You know, we got you on that show. And then actually it took about 8 times of him promising things like that for him to actually do that. And Remembering Never was our very first like
show there.
Yeah. Show. You know what I mean? So
yeah, that's interesting.
It went very, very well and it just worked out. And it's funny now too, because I used to be very like, when my brother would be selling his albums, I'd be like, dude, it's not punk. You know what I mean? Like anything for money.
Right.
My brother used to give me shit all the time for trying to be like, oh, Mr. Punk Rock over here, because I would just try to be like, you know what I mean? Like just that kind of dude.
Right.
So, and I brought that mentality all the way up, even like until pretty recently, you know what I mean?
But now
it's gotten to the point where it's like money matters. And you know, I'm a 24-year-old person, like I have two dogs that, you
right.
know,
you're responsible for some of it besides yourself.
Absolutely. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
So like money has become important. So that's been a new thing for me to, kind of,
wrap your head around.
Not even wrap my head around. I mean, yeah, definitely wrap
right.
my head around, but, to allow myself to be okay with it. You
right. To
I mean?
Like reconcile
yeah.
that you're feeling your teenage angst with like what you're going through with that and being like,
Because I've been handed some stupid amounts of money sometimes. Like, I mean, stupid for me.
Right.
You know
yeah.
I mean?
$600 is stupid for you. You're like, what? You're fucking paying me to work in a smoothie place. Like, whatever. Right.
No, absolutely. So it's like, you know, when I get a check, like, oh, here's, you know, for your publishing, whatever, $6,000. And I was like, what
does that even
mean? Yeah. I'm like, $6,000. Fuck. You know, and I just automatically feel like an asshole. Like I'm ripping somebody off.
Interesting.
You know,
yeah.
And it's weird. I don't know. It's this weird complex.
Yeah.
That I have built up in my head for some reason.
Sure.
Know, it's just like, you know, I feel like I'm becoming more okay with like, I think I've earned it. You know what I mean? Like we've worked so hard and done so many things.
Well, you always have to look at it from the standpoint. It's like, as clinical as it sounds, it's like you are providing a service. Like, and what you're doing isn't devoid of meaning, like, and hollow, like.
That is another thing that I think is weird, because I just, we'll be playing a show, and, like, right before we go on stage, we'll see, like, if it's a, you know, a packed show, like Chain, for instance.
Right.
And I just look at Chris and go, why are they here? You know what I mean? Why do they pay their money to come in to see us? Like, it makes no sense to me. I'm doing something that I would be doing anyways, whether they were here or not.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like, why am I making money off this?
Yeah.
This is fucking crazy.
Oh, totally.
And
then we ring out
and the show is fucking insane and I have the best time of my life.
Right.
You know, but it's the whole money part of it gets really sticky with me and weird. But
yeah.
I'm definitely becoming okay with it now to where it's like, fuck, I need rent. You know what I mean? So
it's like,
just give me that money.
Right. I got to take care of this. But that's interesting because it's like, I think kind of, in my opinion, like stretching from that is the fact that, you know, your band has always been very outspoken about, you know, giving back in some way, shape or form. Mm-hmm. Like now you're actually putting it into action with, you know, like giving, you know, whatever portions of proceeds to merch and all that type of stuff. Like you guys have continually done stuff giving back. That inherently isn't built in to bands.
Yeah. And I think that might be, this might come off in the wrong way, but I think that might be a way of me justifying.
Sure, like you're like, I can feel comfortable with getting paid, provided I'm able to do this.
Absolutely.
Sure.
And not saying I don't care about the people that we're giving to. I'm not trying to do it just for my own, like,
you're just like,
I feel better.
Pick a fucking charity. I don't give a shit. I got to give this 3% in order to, yeah, I understand.
It's definitely just, it's, I think it's super important. And I think I grew up in a house like that. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. my dad, he wasn't around all the time, but it was, you know, he was in Africa building bridges and hospitals and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Wow.
So,
yeah.
And doing, he was in Haiti and Russia, and he was always doing this. You know what I mean? So I was like, yeah. When I was like, my dad wasn't around. It wasn't like that type of thing where it's like my dad's off getting drunk and, you know, doing this. It's my dad's
being responsible. Like, yeah, yeah. Making the world a better place. Literally.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it made him for kind of a weird father situation, but a really good man. You know what I mean?
Right.
Which, you know, that's always, that was a weird, kind of a weird line there.
Sure.
But,
like you were obviously, you looked up to him because you understood that the work that he was doing was meaningful to other people.
Absolutely.
But then I'm sure you were just like, I wish you were here though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, definitely my mom, she raised us. You know what
right,
I mean? So
right,
I
right.
Like,
they were still married at the time though?
Yeah, yeah. And they aren't anymore. Yeah, so that's always just, that's been in my family for a really...
Interesting.
Yeah, and you know, we used to bring these African, my dad would bring an African over, this African dude, he brought this guy named Julius over, who actually taught me how to play piano, and he just stayed, he lived in our house, and he was just this cool fucking guy.
Sure,
and,
like an exchange student in a way.
Absolutely,
yeah, yeah.
And then my dad gave him a whole bunch of stuff to bring back to their tribes, and I remember he sent us this video of, start when that thing Bop It came out, remember that?
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he sent one of those over there, and like, they were like...
This is a miracle.
Yeah, yeah. They, you know, my dad brought him to Disneyland to see like the fucking like show that they do on the water.
Oh, dude.
And he said at first he like jumped back and was like freaking out. He didn't know. He was just like,
sure.
Couldn't even comprehend, you know?
No,
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think stuff like that, like my dad would tell me those stories and stuff like that. I was just like, that's the coolest, you know? And then he brought this other guy, Steven, and his whole family stayed at our house. And he had Steven get his degree and all the stuff and then went back to Africa and
was able to utilize that.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. So I think, yeah, that's just kind of a thing that was just built into me personally. And just, I think that was, yeah, that I was always taught that's important. You know,
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
important to do that. There's people who don't have, you know, you always hear like in like shitty movies or TV shows and the kid doesn't want to eat his food. Like, well, there's people starving. You know what I mean? It's just
yeah.
like, you know, it was,
you're
like
but
that.
You, they're like, they're sitting next
yeah,
to me. You're like, you can say that, and that means something to me.
No, absolutely. So it was like that, but, you know, my parents would say that to me, but exactly, I got to witness it firsthand. And,
right.
And, yeah, so I think that whole thing, you know, like, I run a blog, somekindofhope.com.
Yep.
And I have, like, t-shirts that I do and,
yep.
and you know, whatever. I'm putting another one out, actually, and the money's going to go to the Orange County Humane Society.
Oh, great.
Where's that, Irvine?
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I just, that's always been super important to me. And I, you know, and something, a conversation I've had with my dad too, is like, you know, it's cool that he did all this work everywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I feel like, you know what I mean? I feel like it takes people in, you know what I mean? It's like, I could do all this. I could go there and do work,
sure.
but I come home and then still see all the fucked upness that's
right.
happening in my own.
You want to localize it.
Absolutely.
Right.
And
right.
I feel like if everyone did that, if everyone in their own tribe, so to speak, if Orange County is my tribe,
sure, sure.
There's people who did that and just said, okay, yeah, it's fucked up what's happening in Africa and everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I mean, not, and it's not to sound insensitive at all, but if, you know, those people took care of those problems, and obviously they need aid, and there's people all over the world do that, but it's like, we also need to worry about the things that we have, you know what I mean? It's
yeah,
like,
and not selfishly, but just like, this is what I feel like I can have a direct impact on immediately.
Absolutely. And it's
yeah.
like, I feel like we're stepping over our homeless people to go feed somebody else.
Sure.
A million miles away. You
sure.
know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
there's a guy right in front of your fucking door who wants to eat too, you know?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm not trying to say his life is more valuable than someone else.
Totally,
you know
totally,
I mean? So
yeah, yeah.
It's more of just like, let you know what I mean? If
yeah.
everyone just kind of took care of their own.
Sure,
it would
sure.
be, it would be...
Do you still have close relationships with your mother and your father?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very,
nice.
Very. And, you know, my dad's, you know, is great. I can call him right now. I'll be like, hey, I need a watermelon and a snorkel, and I need you to meet me here in an hour. He'll be like, all right. And, you know, he'll be there. You know what
no,
I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. That's amazing.
Drop of a hat, he just does whatever I need him to do. So
sure.
But he'll, you know, and he does it to the point, it's to the point to where it even, like, is bad for him. Like he'll
sacrifice his own stuff in order to
absolutely
right, sure.
He needs to be doing. You know
right.
what I mean? Like let's say, you know, he needed to go get a new driver's license at the DMV because he's been driving without a license. He can be in line at the DMV, drop his shit and come do it. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
He's a good dad, but at the same time it's just like he should be like, hey, you're 24-year-old, go fuck yourself. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
go
yeah.
take care of your own shit.
Right, right. And do you, like how have they come to terms with the idea? I mean, obviously at this point now they, you know, you're a grown man
yeah.
and the fact that they feel like you can take care of yourself. So it's like, okay, like these
yeah.
are completely fucked up.
No, absolutely.
Like, so how
I
are
think
they?
This whole thing definitely surprised people, especially like, I think for my mom,
mm-hmm.
It was very, she was very like her family situation's a little bit fucked up.
Okay.
Where as far as like they're.
Is it difficult to put into words?
It's not difficult to put into words. I just don't know how to say it without sounding like I'm talking shit on somebody.
Sure.
But I'll just say.
Family situations are always so complicated.
Absolutely.
So.
You know, everyone kind of wants to put up the void of like, I'm the big guy on campus. Like, check out my Beamer and Mercedes and check out the Rolex. You know what I mean?
Of course.
That's how my family, my mom's side of them, you know, they had money.
Got
it. My grandpa and stuff like that. So that was always like their big thing. And like my mom kind of wanted to always, I think, portray this like perfect type of
okay,
family.
Sure.
You know, almost like fucking, what's that movie? Kevin Spacey ends up getting shot.
American Beauty.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, type of situation, you know. And I was, and you know, and then there you got me who's trying to do this whole band thing and I'm piercing my nose. And
oh, yeah.
But even my brother started even earlier than my fucking sister. Whereas, you know, she was piercing her nose and smoking cigarettes when she's 18 and she got pregnant at 18. And then you got, like, my brother who's, like, staining the bathroom blue because he just dyed his hair blue even though he goes to this fucking Catholic school. And you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's, for her, obviously, it's a nightmare.
Oh, totally. She's
for a bunch of kids who are just like, unless you're watching me, I'm going to do something fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to do something you're not going to like. That's just
sure.
how it is. So
right.
I think she came to terms with, like, you know, this is my family and they're fucking perfect. You know what I mean? It's like, she saw the fact that I'm going all these places now and doing all these things. My brother, same, doing all his shit.
Right.
She didn't have to worry about it. Same. You know, that I think was where she was very worried. That's well, you know, she being a mother. She was worried.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And making sure, but at the same time, you know, she wanted us to be like this thing that we just clearly were not. Because obviously I could see like, you know, my uncles and shit, they would pick on me all the time, like, oh, you're vegetarian. And like, well, you know what I mean? Like,
of
the
course.
Whole vegetarian thing and the straight edge thing. And then, like, you know, I got tattoos and I pierced my shit. It's like,
right.
You know, it's like, they don't, to them, they don't get any of that.
No, yeah.
And
yeah.
Especially when they're.
And
like,
when you add it all together, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
If you were one of these things, I could maybe handle
no,
it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they're fucking, you know, cigar smoking, beer drinking, meat eating, you know,
yeah, yeah.
Republicans. You know what I mean? And it's just like,
totally.
Whew, we are complete opposites.
Right.
I love you, but you know, we're complete opposites. And I think, you know, when I was doing the whole band thing, they'd be like, oh, how's your band? And, you know, that ask like
oh,
that.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
I could just see it in their voice or their face where they're just like,
you're like, you don't care.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only do you not care, you just are like waiting for the day where it's like, oh yeah, I tried the band thing. Now I'm, you know, working down at Costco or, you
right,
know
yeah.
I mean? So,
oh, we told you.
Yeah.
Yeah
so
yeah.
It's like, but, you know, now I'm just like, hey, fucking look at my passport, bitch. You know
right,
I mean?
Yeah, look at and you're like, look at these kids that have stick to your gun tattoos.
Yeah.
Like, this clearly has grown into something, quote-unquote, meaningful in anyone's eyes.
Absolutely. So it's just, I think the thing that I brag to my family about the most and my mom likes to brag is the fact that I travel.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm going to these places
of
that
course.
They have never been to and will never go
will
to.
Never
you know
to.
What I mean? So
right.
It's like, that, I think, was the point where, because obviously money, I don't want to say money doesn't mean anything to them, but
right.
It's not, you know, I'm not making millions of dollars. So
right.
They're just going to be like, oh, okay, well, he can support himself as
sure.
a grown man should be able to do.
Right,
you know
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
So, yeah, so it's, that's the kind of the card that I get to play with,
yeah.
with my family on my mom's side. And then my dad's side, same kind of thing. You know what I mean? They're my mom's side's Catholic,
mm-hmm.
like Irish Catholic, and then my dad's side's like Mexican Catholic.
Sure.
And just kind of, you know, very conservative and like, this is, you know, you go to school, you know what I mean? And then,
of course, you need to fall in the assembly line.
Absolutely.
And if you fall out of it, then it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
And I think because, you know, there's been just a lot of fuck, like, because of like, I don't know, you won't, I hate to be like the economy, you know what I mean? But
right.
because of like things like that and like,
yeah.
and you know, everyone's family kind of is situations kind of, I don't want to say falling apart, but like, I think everyone, even on my mom's side and my dad's side are starting to be more like, You know what I mean? Like, oh, this is just how the world is now. You know
right.
what I mean? Kids tattoo themselves and
right.
they scream and can make money from it somehow. You yeah. know what I mean? Like,
they've been able to adapt. Because I think that, to me, that's one of the most interesting things about families is, like, when kids are able to, like, not be, you know, burnouts and do something that is, you know, meaningful outside of what a family would sort of typically think is being successful, you
Absolutely.
Know? Like that's when it breaks the mold
yeah.
and it really does, it transitions them into a different train of thought where it's like, they're not going to treat, you know, the kid that they see bagging their groceries that has full sleeve tattoos, like you're saying, like, you know, like lesser of a human. They're going to
yeah.
be like, oh, like, you know, like that they won't have that thought immediately in their head.
Absolutely. You know, so it's, that's, you know, that's cool. And you know, and it's like, it's the same thing you think of a fucking kid who smokes weed and is like a burnout, you know what I mean? That kid probably started a dispensary and he's a millionaire now. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
in this
yeah.
day and age,
sure.
anything goes.
Right,
and that's
right.
what I think is, you know, it's cool, but it's also, there's, you know, it has its ups and downs.
Of course,
it,
of course.
Like, yeah, it's just like, you know, I think these, the way of thinking, even just like, I think we're so, as technology progresses, we're like, you know, it's like they when I say they say, I don't know who
right, yeah,
are.
They, yeah. the collective they, it's fine.
Exactly. It's like, as you know, every time we make more technology,
uh-huh.
things get faster, you know
what
I mean? And to the point where it's just going to be like, and then we're just dead. You
right,
know,
right,
you know,
right.
We just get so far ahead of ourselves.
That, totally.
So it's just, it's, yeah, anything goes. And that's what I think, like, you know, even in politics, like, I think we're, like, the whole, like, Republican, Democrat thing, like, obviously there's other parties and
of course.
Stuff like that. Like, those are the main ones. I think
yep.
we're too far advanced for any kind of discussion, like, or even, like, God versus no God, or, you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? Like, I feel like everything is so just, like, it's this or this, it's this or this.
Yep.
And I think now, something that I'm realizing just in myself and my own self-reflection and self-awareness is just, like, it's usually right in the middle.
Yeah.
You know
there's,
what I mean? That's
there's
right
something
where
that's
the
called,
answer
yeah,
is.
There's something that's called the gray area.
Absolutely.
And that, you usually find the most truth within that.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, you know, it's, We don't know.
We don't know anything. That's the simplest way, but we kind of just don't know.
For as much as we know, it's like I was watching this TED talk. That's where I get most of my information.
Oh, yeah. yeah. It's very intelligent people talking.
Dr. David Eagleman is like my favorite one.
Okay.
He talks about this thing called possibilianism, and it's basically about, he started his own religion as a joke where basically he doesn't subscribe to anything. You know,
okay.
he said, you know, it's not so much to me about whether the guy in the cloud exists or doesn't exist. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, it's kind of just going and exploring, because he's, I think, I forget the number he said, but he said 90% of our known universe is what we call dark matter. What dark matter is shit we don't know.
We don't know.
You know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
That's 90%.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So that's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For how much, he says we're sweeping a lot under the rug.
We are.
You know, so it's just like the fact that people are willing to die for either, you know, fucking Republican, Democrat, God,
right,
atheist, you know, whatever it is. He's just like, that's fucking nonsense. And it's really, for how intelligent all these people are,
mm-hmm.
it's a very unintelligent thing to
sure
to do. You know what I mean? And I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very, very interesting.
It's able to temper what you believe as a person and be able to, I mean, above all, it's just obviously to be able to put whatever you believe in a, you know, either a different light or in the light that you already kind of view it, where it's like, okay, I see what he's saying.
No, absolutely. And it's, we latch onto these things so hard for whatever. I mean, I understand the reason of why. I know there's a lot of people who like couldn't go on their life if they didn't have God. You
of
know
course.
What I mean? Where
right.
I wish it didn't have to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's like I said, all these people who, because I'll get emails like, oh, you know, you're doing the good thing, you're doing the work of God or Jesus or whatever, like
sure.
with my blogs or my shirts or me trying to do the giving back thing. I'm like, well, I could just say nothing back. I could just not reply, but I feel like I have to, you know
sure.
what I mean? Cause I have to be like, I'm not, you know, and I'm not feeding this person. I'm not trying to feed this person because Jesus would do it. I'm trying to
right.
feed this person because that person is starving. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, it's almost like, and I want to get more bitter about it, where I'm saying almost like, it's almost a protest if that person that's starving, if I'm feeding them, it's a protest against God, because the way I look at it, God took food from them. You know what I mean? It's like,
sure,
if this omnipotent
yeah, yeah.
being can do anything he wants, why is that person starving?
Sure.
So in my protest against God, any God, and I'm not just speaking of Christianity.
Right, right,
people
right.
think, you know, that I get a lot of shit for too. People being like, oh, well, if I was up here preaching Buddhism, you know, you wouldn't give me so much shit. Yeah, I would.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah,
I would. What are you talking
yeah.
about? Or if I was up here, you know, preaching fucking Islam or whatever.
Right.
I'm not targeting one specific thing.
This is the collective religion, as it were.
Absolutely. And you know, another thing I say is like, one thing I did say to somebody who said that to me, I go, yeah, but it's like, let's count how many wars were started over Christianity and how many wars were started over Buddhism.
Sure.
And yeah. Then let's talk. You know, how many people have died?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So it's like, but you know, it's weird because I get into I have a lot of Christian friends and most of my emailing I do back and forth with Christian kids, like, talking. And I'm interested, you know, I'm very much interested in religion. I think it's a crazy
right
thing. I love
you don't shut yourself down to the point where it's like, I can't have a conversation with you.
Yeah, and it's not, and I don't even shut myself down to the point where I'm saying he doesn't exist.
Right.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I'm going to play the wait and see game.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Which why that's not okay in some people's eyes is beyond me. It's like, what? I'm not snorting coke off of hookers' vaginas or, you know, I'm not this crazy shitty person.
Right. I'm not doing something that's really affecting how you are.
Absolutely. So it's like, you know what I mean? It's like, and another thing I had this conversation with Christian kids, like, well, you know what I mean? It's like, while you're having Bible study, there's people starving. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you guys, instead of, you know what I mean? I feel like Christians sometimes, I feel, my
sure,
opinion,
of course,
that they put emphasis and importance on the wrong things. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you really want to do Jesus' work, quit fucking gathering around this book, okay? Yeah, okay, just let's sum it up. Be a good person.
Right.
That's what it says, okay?
Sure.
Just, there you go.
Now simple.
Put it in the drawer.
Cliff's Notes version.
Exactly.
Right.
Close it. There's people starving. There's people who don't have homes. There's people, you know, it's like, go and do that. You're the hour that you guys get together, mm-hmm, whatever week or whatever it is that you guys do, go and do that. Instead
right
of, well, I think what he meant here was, you know what I mean? It's just like, fuck, dude.
Sure.
And I feel like something like religion isn't allowed to have gray area. And that might just be my own closed-minded, ignorant thing to it, but it's just like, if this Bible is the word of God, it's the word of God. And it's
right
not, you know what I mean? It's not, there should be no gray area in here. It's
sure.
You know what I mean?
This
it's
is
like,
what it is.
This
yeah,
is
yeah
what it is.
Printed in ink, et cetera, et cetera.
You know
yeah
what I mean? Well, in Leviticus, it says, you know, a man cannot lay with another man. Therefore, homosexuality is wrong. Well, in Leviticus, it also says you can't plant two crops together. And if you do, you're supposed to be stoned to death by the whole village.
Exactly.
Or,
you
know,
can't work
out.
You
can't
right,
have,
right.
Exactly. You can't have tattoos.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's like, these are things that I try to discuss with the dudes in four today. It's like, they're all covered in tattoos, yet homosexuality is wrong. In the same book, it says both are wrong.
Yeah.
How come you're allowed to choose that one over the other? Well, you know, it says in the New Testament that some of the Old Testament could be taken away and blah, blah, blah. It's just this big fucking mind game of like, you know what?
You're like, I'm confused.
I'm confused. And not only that, I don't care.
Right.
I like
right
the part where it says like, Jesus, you know, did this cool shit for these people who didn't have it.
Right.
That's the part.
Jesus is love.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool. I back that.
So preach that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And,
right.
And
when you get so bogged down in the details, you sometimes lose the forest from the trees. And sometimes
absolutely
it's like, that's, you know, that's obviously when people are passionate about something. It's like, you know, like we were joking about with, you know, your brother not being able to mix it up with the straight edge kids. And it's like, you know, 10 years from now, they would be able to hang out together and
absolutely
that would be fine. But
yeah,
your 16-year-old mental capacity is just like that dude is a, oh, I can't fucking
yeah
believe that guy.
Exactly.
But that, yeah. You
which
just,
all those dudes are now sellouts. And,
right.
You know what I mean? So
yeah
it's like, yeah, it's fucking crazy. And it's like another thing Dr. David Eagleman says is like, there's a reason why there's not a big blossom of Islam in the middle of fucking Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's the same thing, you know, and that's another thing I say is like, I try to, I don't want to say preach on stage, but that's
right
what I try to say is like, don't be a victim of geography. Like, you think, you don't see the coincidence in the fact that you're born and from a place called the Bible Belt and you believe the things you do. It's because the culture that's been poured into your brain.
Of course.
Like, I don't understand how you can even deny that. Like, if you
right
were born in Indonesia that has the biggest Muslim population, it's
mm-hmm
like, probably wouldn't be talking about this white Jesus. You know
right
what I mean?
Right.
It's like, it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
So like, I can go on and on and on and
no,
I'd rather not, you know what I mean? But it's just, I wish people would just.
Well, I think to kind of sum everything up, I think it's great that you're obviously doing what you're doing and you're able to like have these genuine conversations with people because it's like, you're 24 years old, but you've experienced a decent amount and you've actually thought things through, which I think is different than a lot of other people.
It's 10-hour drives, man.
Yeah. Every night. You're like, I got all the time in the world to think. But yeah, I mean, but it's just, it's good because it's like, you're coming, I mean, and the perception of the band as well. It's like, you know, you're coming at it from a non-judgmental point of view.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is like, it's like, you're like, I will share my opinion and I will, you know, I could be just as wrong as you could be.
Absolutely.
But you're like, at least we can have a discussion about it. And it challenges both of you, both you and the other person.
Yeah. And I think this, I found this dude named Jiddu Krishnamurti. I don't know if you know who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, in our record, on our new one and in our old one, he's the quote of like the old Indian man that everyone just automatically assumes is Gandhi.
Okay, sure. Right.
Like, oh, it's an old Indian man. It's Gandhi.
Yeah,
that's
of course.
The old, only old Indian that ever existed.
Right.
But his name's Jiddu Krishnamurti, and he, I found him somehow on YouTube, and that was like the most emotional night for me in the entire fucking world. That movie Zeitgeist has a couple of quotes from him in it and stuff like that, but he's just like, that's how he thinks. Is very like I'm just complete, my whole way of thinking is just plagiarizing him.
Sure.
So
well, but that's fine.
Yeah, and I have his books, and it's even people like Deepak Chopra and you know, Rumi and all these things, where Rumi has this great quote where he says, beyond all ideas of right and wrong, there's a field and I'll meet you there, you know what I mean? Where I feel that to be very like, that's just insane. I read that and I was just like, fuck,
you're
that's
like,
the most on point shit I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah,
you know,
just like,
I mean?
It's the same feeling that you had when you saw a tattoo in your brother's friend.
Yeah, absolutely. My mind, it's like a door opened, you know what I mean? Exploded, and it's just like, I feel that. It's just like, we're so worried about being right and wrong. Let's just talk about different ideas. You know what I mean? And it doesn't matter. Oh, that could be right. Oh, that would be interesting. You know what I mean? Where,
yeah.
And that's basically what that dude, Jiddu Krishnamurti, talks about. He talks about self-reflection and you know, a thing that he said that really stuck with me is that, you know, I think we all live our lives like we are one drop in the entire ocean, but instead we should change our perspective of we are the entire ocean in one drop. And the things that we do and the things that are going on inside of us are complete just reflections of everything that's going on. So it's like, if you see something that you don't like, for instance, you know, just whatever it is, like anything, homelessness,
sure.
Anything, that's actually something that's going on inside of you that you can change.
Right.
And as the second you realize that and become self-aware, then you'll start slowly realizing all these other things that are around you that you don't like start to tap in and change.
Sure.
And so, yeah, it's just that. And then even they sometimes get way too just like, I gotta close this book, man.
Yeah, you're like, okay, this. Right.
You know what I mean? So,
you're like, I've gotten what I need out of that.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's cool just to explore that. And that's, I feel like I talk about religion, I talk about Christianity all the time in the way that I just said, where it's just, and Christians will come up to me and go, you know, you're like, Jesus is speaking to you and speaking through you. You just don't know it.
Hmm.
And I go, no, I don't think that's true. I think that like these people are realizing that you can still have these quote unquote Christian values.
Of course.
Which I call human values,
right?
and not have to believe in God. You know what I mean? Where mm-hmm. I, you know, anything that challenges their way of thinking, they just get, oh shit. But it's almost like they agree with me, but they don't want to say they agree with me because that would also be them agreeing to God not existing in their minds, even though that's not what I'm saying at all.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No.
So it's this big fucking thing that I'm just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm gonna go. You know.
Yeah.
Do this. It's funny what we were talking about earlier with the old dogs. I wanted to say this to you. It's completely off subject of what we're talking
that's
about.
That's fine. That's fine.
But it just reminded me of it. Is something I really want to do is in Montreal or somewhere. Just
sure.
With a lot of land or something.
Okay.
I want to adopt all the old dogs from anywhere and just let them run.
Just
free.
Let them hang
yeah,
out.
You know what I mean? It's like, hey, they're going to die. No one wants it. You know, that's why I was going to tell you, it's so fucking cool to you that you wait and get the old one. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Of course.
It's like,
everyone wants the puppy.
Absolutely.
Totally.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I want to get all just... your oldest, shittiest, most fucked up
right.
Three-legged guy
yeah.
Who's, you know, can't even...
barely alive,
exactly.
Right.
Just let him lay in a field in the sun, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And chill out and let him die there.
Here's some food, here's some water.
Absolutely.
Man. Enjoy. Well, I hope
sure.
Stick to Your Guns is able to get you to that level where you can buy 30 acres and I will come visit you on your dog farm.
That would be great. That's the thing that sucks, I would love to do it here, but I don't think there's a single area of 30 acres left.
Yeah, I know. That's true. That isn't owned by the Irvine Company.
Absolutely.
Well, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
Thank you very much for hanging out and talking about a lot of shit.
The The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.